This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, July 26th, 2021, on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. I'm Kyle Kellums. In about 4 minutes, Roby Brock with our partner Talk Business and Politics will be with us to discuss a proposal from Republican gubernatorial candidate Leslie Rutledge to eliminate the state's income tax. And we'll also talk about GOP Republican gubernatorial candidate Sarah Huckabee Sanders' op-ed about vaccinations. And later, in our second half hour, Randy Dixon with the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History will provide audio proof of what was news in Arkansas on this day 27 years ago. Then, after Ozarks at Large on Here and Now, with only 1% of Africans vaccinated, the pandemic there is raging, taking lives, and stressing the hospital system. We'll hear a report from Zambia, plus all of the day's news on Here and Now, beginning at 1 on KUAF. The new cases of COVID-19 in Arkansas are still increasing. The Arkansas Department of Health is again providing weekend updates as a summer surge intensifies. Saturday and Sunday reports include a combined 3,037 new cases and 13 newly reported deaths from the virus. Active cases in the state now top 15,000. That's about 1,400 more than on Friday. And hospital beds dedicated to COVID-19 patients continue to increase, with 48 more hospitalizations since Friday, and a net increase of 14 more patients requiring ventilation. There are now 919 hospital beds occupied by COVID-19 patients in Arkansas. And the most recent update from hospitals in Benton and Washington counties late Friday shows 87 COVID-19 patients, a 263% increase in 5 weeks. The average age of a COVID-19 patient in Northwest Arkansas is 58, the youngest patient 21. Governor Asa Hutchinson is continuing his statewide tour to convince more Arkansans to get vaccinated. He has 4 additional town hall meetings scheduled this week, including today in Mountain Home. Speaking on CNN's State of the Union yesterday, Governor Hutchinson said government can't be the one to convince people to get vaccinated.
It is the community and their engagement and citizens talking to other citizens and trust advisors, whether it's medical community or whether it's employers, those are key. That's why I'm having these town hall meetings. It's more than listening. It is really engaging the community. And so far, we've seen a 40% increase in our vaccinations since we started this.
Tomorrow, Governor Hutchinson will hold a community COVID conversation in Dumas, with additional ones scheduled later in the week in Heber Springs and Siloam Springs. Last week, a group of Democratic state lawmakers requested the governor call a special session or reconvene the legislature to reconsider a law taking effect that would prohibit schools from mandating students wear masks. The governor acknowledged on CNN yesterday that resuming classes when those under 12 aren't able to get vaccinated is an issue that needs to be addressed. But he said it would be up to legislative leaders to determine whether to reconsider the law. A walk-up opportunity to receive the Pfizer vaccine is taking place tomorrow from noon until 6 p.m. at Central Mall in Fort Smith. The clinic is operated by the Arkansas Foundation for Medical Care. Those receiving a first Pfizer shot tomorrow will then be able to get the second shot on August 17th. More information about tomorrow's clinic in Fort Smith at 800-985-6030. Southwestern Electric Power Company, or SWEPCO, is seeking the right to increase rates for Arkansas customers. The request, totaling about $85 million, has been submitted to the Arkansas Public Service Commission. In a press release announcing the request for new rates, SWEPCO officials write the utility has made significant investments in wind power generation, and that project will save an estimated $2 billion over the next 3 decades. The request is to, according to the press release, recover environmental and resiliency costs associated with providing cleaner and more reliable energy. If approved, the increase would go into effect likely in summer 2022. SWEPCO estimates an Arkansas customer using 1,000 kilowatts per month would see a monthly price increase of just less than $19 a month. The University of Arkansas Sports Hall of Fame will add 6 new inductees with an event in September. Among those in the class of 2021 is Sandy Morris, former Razorback pole vaulter, representing the United States this month in the Tokyo Olympics. Those in the class of 2020 will also be honored at the ceremony this fall, since there was no induction event last year because of the pandemic. And finally, hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. High temperatures this afternoon will be from 93 in northwest Arkansas to 98 in the Arkansas River Valley. Heat index readings today, 103 to 110. The National Weather Service is issuing a heat advisory for eastern Oklahoma and west central Arkansas until 8 tonight. This is Ozarks at Large, and with me on the phone is Roby Brock with Talk Business and Politics. Roby, as always, thank you for your time and joining us.
Always happy to be with you and your listeners, Kyle.
Are you in Little Rock as we talk?
Today, yes, I am. Tomorrow, who knows?
Are you doing community conversations, Talk Business style?
No.
All right.
But thanks for asking. So.
Well, I know it's early, but let's talk about the Republican gubernatorial candidates, or at least the big two, Leslie Rutledge and Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Let's start with Leslie Rutledge. Late last week, she unveiled the Rutledge plan, which would eliminate personal income tax in Arkansas. She wants to get it on the ballot in front of voters. Is this something that could get her traction in the GOP primary?
It could get her some traction, but it's, I don't think it gives her enough traction to make up the ground she's got to make up on Sarah Huckabee Sanders right now. It is that two-person race right now for the Republican nomination. And so I think that this is something that will appeal to some very conservative voters that might wonder where Sarah Huckabee is in terms of details of a plan. Sarah Huckabee Sanders has said she's for reducing or eliminating the income tax, too, but she's not really laid out any specifics on this. Leslie Rutledge's plan is to eliminate completely the state income tax by 2030. So if it were to get on the ballot and pass, you're talking about in less than 8 years, you're talking about getting rid of over 50% of state revenue.
Which would mean, and her plan is to get on the ballot, get in front of voters. And if it were to be on the ballot, and if voters did approve it, and you had 8 years to eliminate it, that would be some work for some legislative sessions. Where's the more than 50% going to come from?
It's kind of reminiscent of term limits. It's reminiscent of medical marijuana. If it were to get on in the past, then you've got all of these things you got to figure out what to do. And the legislature has always managed to do that, albeit slowly, but they've always worked through some of those big ballot issues that voters have approved that might go against the grain of what the majority of the legislature would want to do. I think if this gets on the ballot, it will be politically popular. I think there'll be a huge grassroots campaign against it, orchestrated by some of the business and education interests in the state. It is a pretty unrealistic scenario when you try to talk through logistically how you would make that happen and keep some government services intact. So let me just throw some statistics out there for listeners. First of all, the state income tax brings in a little over $3.4 billion annually. That's the last fiscal year. The state's budget is $6.8 billion. It is literally 50.6% of the state revenues this past year. So you're talking about cutting 50% of state revenues, and that sounds good and easy to do. You know, hey, we'll just cut everybody's budgets by half. But 95% of the state budget goes to Medicaid, human services, public safety and prisons, and education, K-12, and higher education. That's 95% of the state budget goes to what they call the Big Six. So are you going to close 50% of the schools? Are you going to close 50% of the prisons? Are you going to kick 50% of grandmas out of nursing homes? I mean, that's what this is going to come down to if voters approve eliminating 50% of state revenue in an 8-year time span. It can be done, but it would be pretty painful for a lot of people.
Well, let's turn then to Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who has told voters through an op-ed titled "Why I Got Vaccinated" that she has, in fact, received a vaccination, but says, "I'm not going to tell you whether to do it or not."
This comes down to the Republican Party base right now is about personal freedom and choice. It is obviously dominated by the Trump strain of Republicanism, particularly in Arkansas. Sarah Huckabee Sanders is going to play to that base. When we polled her numbers a little over a month ago, I mean, she was at 82% popularity with Republican voters, 6% disapproved. You got an 82-6 approved disapprove. You're in pretty good standing. You're not going to rock that boat.
Right.
Leslie Rutledge, contrastly, was at 48% approve and 20 disapprove. So she clearly has some distance to make up between her and Sarah Huckabee Sanders. So I think that that op-ed, you know, basically gets her on record as saying, "I got vaccinated. I'm the responsible adult in the room, but you do what you need, think you need to do." And so she's still playing to that base of, you know, "I'm not going to tell you what to do." She tweeted over, I think, the last couple of days, too, that there would be no mask mandate and no vaccine mandate if she were elected governor as well. So I kind of describe this as laissez-faire policy on health policy in Arkansas. We're kind of going pretty libertarian with everybody. Do what you want to do. I mean, the governor has emphasized personal responsibility. Health officials are constrained by the legislature that, you know, has thrown up a bunch of roadblocks for them to be more aggressive with public health policy. And so it's almost every person for himself or herself at this point in time. You know, choose your science, choose not to follow science, but you're on your own.
And you mentioned Governor Hutchinson. He's got a handful of the community conversations again throughout the state this week. I think he's in Mountain Home this week. Mountain Home, the subject of a front page New York Times story last weekend about low vaccination rates and surging cases in the hospital there. We have had days of 12,000 or 14,000 vaccinations, but, you know, many of those first vaccinations, we've still got a month before many people are fully immunized.
And I still contend that the community conversations are not moving the needle. We've sent a reporter to at least one of those. And, I mean, a lady talked about not getting the vaccine because she was afraid that she would become magnetized somehow, which there were several people in the room that did not have metal objects being attracted to them. So I'm not sure where some of this misinformation, disinformation, you know, ignorance kind of comes from, but it's truly out there. And I just don't think that there's a large enough number of people that are listening to the governor or coming to these community meetings that are going to have their minds changed by this. You might pick up, you know, a handful of people, and that's better than nothing, but it's a pretty big exercise to not move the needle significantly. You mentioned that some vaccinations are on the rise, and I think that's primarily out of fear. I mean, people are seeing that this Delta variant is affecting us differently than the original COVID-19 coronavirus. And truthfully, I think the worry is, I interviewed Dr. Joe Thompson, former state surgeon general, just this weekend, and he says that the next variant after Delta or the one after that may be resistant to the vaccines. We have not moved quickly enough to vaccinate, to eradicate this COVID-19 menace. And it's going to mutate to the point, if we're not careful, that the vaccines don't work, or they're going to have to develop a new vaccine. And that's a whole nother round for everyone. And that's kind of where we're at with low vaccination rates in Arkansas and, quite frankly, through the heartland of the U.S.
Sobering thoughts. You can follow all sorts of Arkansas business, politics, and other information at talkbusiness.net. Roby, thank you so much for your time.
Anytime, Kyle.
America's Got Talent contestant Lindsey Stirling comes to the Walmart Amp in Rogers Tuesday, July 27th. This American violinist, singer, songwriter, and dancer's show include large-scale visual effects, choreography, and theatrical staging. Amp tickets.com or 443-5600 for tickets and more information.
This is Ozarks at Large. Sunday, nearly a dozen hairstylists based in Northwest Arkansas will offer free haircuts for LGBTQIA2S+ youth as a new school year nears. The inaugural Gender-Free Haircut Club in Fayetteville is being organized by Scarlett Howell, owner of High Ground Hair Space in South Fayetteville. Scarlett came to the Carver Center for Public Radio Saturday afternoon to tell us more about the event. She says the free cuts can be the first time recipients are seeing themselves and being treated in a positive, gender-affirming way.
So we are a part of a group called the Dress Code Project, which is based out of Canada. And they are working to make salons and barbershops and spaces like that more gender inclusive by removing the actual genderization from haircutting. So not calling it a men's cut or a woman's cut, saying short, medium, long, not using terms like pixie cut, things like that, that can make people feel like they're not themselves.
So this inaugural offer, tell me about this. This is amazing.
So because we're part of the Dress Code Project, we are able to actually open up our space after having training from them to offer free haircuts to the LGBTQIA2S+ community. We originally were going to offer it to like 18 and younger. So like the kids that couldn't necessarily afford to get their hair cut in a gender affirming way or something like that. But we've actually decided we've had such a great interest from other hairdressers in our area who want to help volunteer and kind of come together to open it up to all ages.
Oh, so it's gone from 18. And then I know that when you and I were talking about sitting down for this conversation, you were thinking about 21. Now it's...
Yeah. We've had 9 stylists, including our team, volunteer and show interest. So that's really exciting. I'm going to do a little mini training with them beforehand. But yeah, so I'm excited that we'll be able to like offer this annually and have like this space for this community in our area.
It's Sunday, August 1st. Is this kind of connected with the start of a school year?
Yeah, I feel like during the year, there's a lot of new beginnings that you get to have. It's not just like the new year. And so going back to school or coming back from summer where things are a little slower and, you know, you can kind of start over again and have a fresh year feeling however you want to feel.
Hair is so important, such an identifier, and also such a versatile component of how you want to look and think about yourself.
Most definitely. I feel like as we have like pulled influence and like hair has become more mainstream, it's not as much of like a privatized thing anymore. It's no longer like, well, I only go to a barber shop or I only go to this hairdresser. It's I am super artistic and I want to express myself through my hair. I am a musician. I want to like have this haircut that I saw and this rock star that I saw from something my parents listened to. And hair is a game changer. Hair is super personal and hair is political and it always has been. And that's something that's really important to me in the space is validating that and making the people in the space feel like they're seen and that they're the best, most authentic version of themselves.
Considering all that you just said about hair and how we feel about our hair, it's an intimate relationship you have. A lot of the folks who are going to be taking advantage of this inaugural offer are people you've probably never met. So how do you establish that, you know, trust or just relationship quickly?
I will say that I've worked really hard to create a space that feels very familiar, even if you've never been in there before. The LGBT community has always been a very important part of my life. I've always had a really tight network of friends that were part of the community. And I can 100% say that I would not be who I am today if it wasn't for them and how they helped raise me and nurture me. So I wanted to actively seek out to create a safe space for them as well. So having people come in the space, and we've had some experiences where even like younger teenagers, like 14, 15, will say like, are you part of the LGBT community? You know, and the stylist said, yeah, I am. And they're like, oh, that's awesome. I just told my mom I'm pan. Mm. And she was like, that's amazing. Like, how do you feel? Like, did you just tell this? She's like, you're the second person I've told. I just told my mom outside because I saw the space and I felt safe to do that. And like, of course, when I heard that, I was like, pardon me while I weep uncontrollably.
Right.
But, you know, I was always like a weird kid. And like, I wanted a space that felt like me and I felt cool enough to be in. And I felt like people were interested in me. And I think the environment is a huge thing.
So how does someone, if they're interested in the Gender Free Haircut Club, how do they go about making an appointment?
We do have a booking link in our bio. And we ask that you tell us what your hair is like. If it's long and you want to keep it long, if it's short and you want to keep it short, or if you want to do a transformation. And then we will have appointments booked and scheduled, and we will send out confirmations like 1 or 2 days beforehand.
What do you think it's going to be like? You've got these other stylists, your team.
I have not seen this kind of like genuine connection in the hair community here since I've moved here. And it makes me so excited because there's so much new ownership in the salon industry here. And we're all like, hey, let's hang out. Let's do these community events. Let's get together and uplift each other. And there's enough room for everybody. And that's been so nice. I couldn't ask for anything more. Stylist I've never even met have messaged me and been like, hey, I would love to be a part of this. People in the community are like, hey, what can I donate? How can I help? And the local Paul Mitchell School is actually letting us use some of their chairs, which is amazing because my space is 400 square feet. So we are going to have a whole situation. But yeah, it's been really wonderful.
All kinds of hair? All kinds of textures and
all
lengths?
All kinds of hair.
Okay.
Yes.
And where is this? We should tell people where you are.
So I own High Ground Hair Space. We are at 557 South School Avenue, number 107. If you are familiar with Woodstone Pizza downtown, if you're looking at Woodstone Pizza, you look to the back right corner, and we're like nestled in there.
So you're in Fayetteville. You're probably going to have some people that aren't from Fayetteville take
Hopefully.
Advantage of this.
Yeah, I mean, we saw 22,000 people at Pride. And so you are welcome to come from anywhere and everywhere.
There are still small towns. I grew up in this small town where it was a barbershop and that was it. I mean, I think there were stylists, but they were for predominant, exclusively women. If you were a kid, you went to this one place. And so you might have some young people who are coming from these small towns who haven't had this option maybe ever.
Yeah, and that's what's so exciting is getting to have these like moments of people with people and with, you know, kids and teenagers and saying like, hey, like there's enough room for you. And even if you feel like you don't necessarily fit in your small town or your high school or at home, like I'm happy to hold space for you and I'm happy to like see you.
Charlotte, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks so much for having me. I totally appreciate it.
You'll let us know how it goes.
Most definitely.
Scarlett Howell is the owner of High Ground Hair Space and an organizer of Sunday's Gender Free Haircut Club event taking place in Fayetteville. Appointments can be made by sending a text to 225-5964. That's a 479 number. 225-5964. There is also a booking link at the Instagram profile, Instagram.com/highgroundhairspace. This afternoon on All Things Considered on KUAF, longtime members of the Free Britney movement have protested the pop star's conservatorship for a while. Some used to be laughed at and dismissed. How that's changed. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News from 3 to 6 on KUAF.
For the first time since 2014, KUAF is asking for your feedback in the 2021 listener survey. It takes less than 10 minutes to share your favorite programs, when and how you listen, and what we can do better to serve everyone in our listening community. You are the public in public radio, and your voice matters to KUAF. And when you finish the survey, you'll be entered into a drawing to win a huge prize package full of KUAF posters, mugs, CDs, stickers, and more. Go to KUAF.com to take the 2021 listener survey and be entered to win.
Attention, creatives and nonprofits. The sometimes confusing and sometimes intimidating act of applying for grants is going to be made a bit easier for you next month. The Arkansas Arts Council is hosting a series of free virtual workshops to help with the grant application process. Late last week, we called Patrick Ralston, the director of the Arkansas Arts Council, to find out a little bit more.
It's a series of workshops on grant seeking, grant writing, grant, and just the nuts and bolts of getting grants and for organizations and for individuals.
And this can be, if you don't know the first, or maybe if you only know the first or second thing about this process, it can be intimidating.
Well, it is. And there's, as a person who has had to write grants to different kinds of organizations, federal, state, and to foundations over the years, you learn pretty quickly that there's no two grants are the same, but at the same time, there are certain skills, abilities that you can build to be a more successful grant seeker and grant writer. And so that is really what we are trying to teach is across different disciplines, different types of organizations. We're trying to help people develop and hone those skills. And Brenda Malden, who is the instructor for our program, has certainly forgotten more in grants and nonprofit management than I will ever know. And so she is she's always a great teacher.
It's virtual. That means it's open to anyone in Arkansas?
That's correct. That's correct. And we encourage everybody, no matter where they are, to sign up. It's a we do these free of charge. Have been doing them throughout the pandemic. We actually did them live before the pandemic, but we took everything online in the last year, and they've been tremendously successful. The desire to learn has not stopped during the pandemic.
And it's three consecutive Wednesdays at the same time, right? The 11th, the 18th, and 25th of August?
That's correct. That's correct. Each one is a different program, a different phase of the process, and it really takes you through the complete all phases and all skills necessary for seeking and writing grants.
Patrick Ralston is the director of the Arkansas Arts Council, and he talked to us late last week. More details about the three free Wednesday workshops can be found at arkansasarts.org. Since the workshops are virtual, anybody in the state can attend live.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society and the KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series presents the Fayetteville Jazz Collective Octet, July 30th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Butterfield Stage in downtown Rogers. Information and tickets are available at digjazz.com.
Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, we'll go to Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville to attend their Camp Connect, a summer day camp for children with autism. Ozarks at Large's Matthew Moore will have that story. We also plan to have John Brummett, political columnist with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, with us for his take on the past 7 days of political news. And we meet a student at the University of Arkansas working to save declining wild bee populations. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich tells us about that on tomorrow's show at noon and 7 p.m. on KUAF. Also available at the KUAF app. Also available by podcast through free subscription through KUAF.com or any major podcast distributor. And also at OzarksAtLarge.com. Oh, and also by asking your smart speaker to please play Ozarks at Large.
KATV Channel 7, The Spirit of Arkansas. Now, live with Arkansas's most watched news team. This is Channel 7 News at 6 with Gina Curry, Ned Permy with weather, and Paul Eales on sports.
It's July 26th, but what we just heard, well, that was also July 26th, wasn't it, Randy Dixon?
Some years ago, yes.
Randy Dixon is with the Dave and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. He joins me every Monday so we can take a trip back in time, courtesy of Pryor Center Archives. What are we doing this time?
Well, this is a true time capsule. It was 27 years ago today, July 26, 1994. So if it's your birthday today, happy birthday, first of all. But this is what was news on your birthday 27 years ago.
I hope somebody listening to us right now, it's their 27th birthday, and we're telling them what happened on the day they were
on the
born.
Day. Oh, wouldn't that be awesome?
Here is my only – well, I have two thoughts. When you emailed me that this is what we were going to be talking about this week, I had two thoughts. One, oh, we're getting some more recent files digitized back from Pennsylvania.
Right, right. The Media Preserve in Pennsylvania is now digitizing the later videotapes. We've done the film from the 50s, 60s, 70s. Now we are doing the later material. And so far they've done 12,000 of the 26,000 videotapes. So over the next year, we are going to be posting more and more.
And this means the pool of what we can hear is growing.
Yes.
So that's the plus. Here's the minus. I was actually – this is the first time we're going to talk about something when I was actually producing and hosting Ozarks at Large, and this makes me feel old.
Well, me too.
Okay.
Well, the stuff that we've been doing, I was sort of reliving my childhood as you were.
Yes.
Now we're – I think you and I will start reliving our careers.
Yay. Yay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about July 26, 1994. Set the stage.
Okay. Well, Bill Clinton was in the White House. Jim Guy Tucker was in the governor's mansion. Danny Ford was the coach of the Razorbacks football team. So I came across the KATV Channel 7 newscast from that day and thought it might be kind of nice to just take a little bit of the top news story, a little bit of the weather, a little bit of the sports, and maybe even some commercials.
Okay.
To sort of take you back in time.
So what do we start with?
Well, the first one, and it was the lead story of the day. It was about a local Fayetteville figure, and you know who he was, an attorney, was actually running for attorney general at the time, Dan Ivey.
He had also run for the third congressional seat in Arkansas at some point for the Democratic nomination.
Yes, yes. He did that in, I guess, a couple of years before.
Maybe 92.
Run against John Paul Hammerschmidt and lost. But he was mostly known for his he had a bigger-than-life sort of personality, and he would do these commercials, you know, if I don't win your case, you don't owe me anything.
Right.
And he was sort of like the other man in black. He always wore black and had a black cowboy hat and would run these commercials, but this news story is not too pleasant. He was in little legal trouble at the time. He was accused of domestic abuse of by his wife.
Right.
And KATV had gotten the 911 tapes of him being accused of pulling a baseball bat on his wife. So here's the lead story with Gina Curry and Randy Kaye, who is now with CNN, but at the time was with KATV.
Good evening, I'm Gina Curry. We begin tonight with more on the Dan Ivey story in Fayetteville. He's the Republican candidate for attorney general. The recent charges against him for allegedly attacking his wife with a baseball bat may be a major roadblock in his campaign trail. Channel 7 was the first to bring you the recording of the 911 calls made by both Sarah and Dan Ivey. Randy Kaye followed up on the story today, and she's learned more about the family.
What actually happened inside the Ivy's Fayetteville home Sunday night is still unclear. Sarah Ivey called 911 begging for help just minutes before her husband, Dan Ivey, called to say he hadn't harmed her.
He just threatened to hit me with a baseball bat earlier on the phone when he got here.
Did he have a baseball bat with him?
That was the lead story on this day in 1994.
Yes. By the way, he was later convicted of that battery charge and became a minister, and then he died a few years ago.
Yeah.
I think it was in 2017.
Yeah. All right, so if that was the top story of the day, what else was on that newscast?
Well, it was a pretty slow news day. there wasn't a whole lot else going on, but the weather was kind of interesting. Ned Permy, who is now retired, has just a little bit of a forecast, and actually it was in central Arkansas, but he mentions us up here.
I can't keep up with how often this weather has been changing today alone.
Yeah, it started out nice and it went downhill real fast in most areas. And we had some sunshine popped out for an hour or two late this afternoon, but now more rain, thunderstorms. But the thing is, I'm curiously and cautiously excited about the results this cold front will have on Arkansas this time of year. It looks like all the data
could be dramatic?
Well, for this time of year, to see temperatures at night in the 60s and even the 50s over northern Arkansas, which is what we're looking at later on tonight and especially tomorrow night.
Now, Ned Permy is a very familiar name still to people in central Arkansas. I know he's retired now, but he was a household name.
Yes.
For those of us in northwest Arkansas, not as much.
Not so much.
Right.
Yeah, he's quite an artist. He's a painter now and has a gallery in central Arkansas.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. And was known for his, he would play Christmas music at the end of the newscast.
Now, he didn't do things like draw the
weather. No, he didn't do the Gusty thing.
Gusty or something,
yeah.
Okay. All right.
Gusty was, that was in Little Rock, but it was also in Tulsa.
Yeah, Tulsa is where, people from Tulsa will tell me
about they invented it.
Okay.
The KTUL in Tulsa.
Weather coverage was so much different then.
Boy,
it
really
now.
Was.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, so we've had the news, we've had the weather.
Let's talk about sports.
Let's.
And, you know, this time of year is a little slow.
Oh, well, you know, unless you care about who's on the third string defensive line for the Razorbacks.
Yes, that's true. But they, you know, to kind of keep interest, they would have the SEC coaches media days.
Mm.
It was usually in Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
And all the coaches and some of the players would come down and you know, the sports crew would spend a week down in Birmingham and talk to all the guys. So that's what was happening today, 27 years ago. And the late, great Paul Eales, who was voice of the Razorbacks, I mean, even people up here know who he was.
Yes.
Because he was the voice of the Razorbacks. He was the sports director at KATV, but this is his sports cast, and Jeff Wingfield was the sports guy who was down in Birmingham.
Paul is here with sports. Are the coaches deciding anything?
Oh, the nice thing is that all of them can say a lot of things because they don't have to back them up with wins and losses right now, Gina. But it's interesting. This is an interesting time of the year for them. It certainly is. For the better part of July, as you know, coaches have been in daily meetings preparing for the upcoming football season. For most, in a week to 10 days, they'll be greeting the new freshman class, but not before a side trip to Birmingham for the annual SEC Media Days, where all are undefeated and certainly have high hopes. Channel 7's Jeff Wingfield is on hand this week, and tonight begins his SEC reports.
In trouble. And Avery Hilliard on a safety blitz got him.
Yes, we're ahead of ourselves just a little bit. The football playing season is a month or so away. The football talking season, however, is in full swing.
I once flew on a plane to Dallas with Paul Eales to the Southwest Conference Media Days.
Mm-hmm.
We had tickets next to each other. You know, this is, everyone will tell you this, nicest guy in the world. Here I was.
Nicest man.
Gosh, I had to be, you know, 23 or 24, going to this thing for the first time as a sports reporter from Mountain Home, Arkansas.
Yeah.
He just chatted me up the whole way, gave, you know.
Oh, he was great.
It was as if I was his peer. It was amazing.
You know, I was his producer for years.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter where we went. People knew who he was. I mean, we would be out of state, mm-hmm. and there would be Razorback fans. And we could not get through a meal.
I bet.
Without people walking up, and he would
gracious.
Stop
yeah.
what he was doing to talk to them.
Yeah.
He was an awesome person.
All right. So, and you mentioned that was the era when Danny Ford, formerly of Clemson, was our head coach.
Yes. Yeah.
Not,
that was
not the most successful era in Razorback football.
No.
Okay.
Enough said.
Yes.
All right. So let's talk world news.
Okay.
I also came across the world news tonight, ABC's broadcast, and I'm sure you remember Peter Jennings.
Yes.
This was the opening to that newscast.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings.
Good evening. We begin tonight with peace and war in the Middle East. A peace of the brave is how the Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin described Israel's new relationship with Jordan. Today, he and King Hussein addressed a joint meeting of Congress. But even as they spoke, police in London were clearing away the rubble after a powerful car bomb blew up outside the Israeli embassy. The work of terrorists, said Mr. Rabin, intent on wrecking the peace process.
And again, we are listening to what happened, what was discussed on this very day in 1994, 27 years ago.
Yes, and that was the top story about the Middle East. And, you know, Rabin would end up being assassinated the next year.
Right.
This was, you know, that one little nugget of history with Clinton in the White House.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
Yeah. So I came across a couple of other things, and I wanted to bring this up because you remember the show NYPD Blue?
I do.
It caused quite a bit of controversy.
Yes. I mean, they would show a little bit more skin than we had had on broad.
A little saltier
language.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, well, and the reason I brought this up is that even before it aired on ABC, since we were an ABC affiliate,
right.
we had some pickets.
Oh, yeah.
And people wanting to boycott any advertisers on Channel 7 that it aired, even before it aired. They had never seen the show. Well, and
weren't there some ABC affiliates that either didn't air it
yes.
or would wait till 11:30 at night to air it?
Yes. And KATV, fortunately, you know, Dale Nicholson, who was the general manager, stood his ground and and aired it. And the reason I wanted to run this network promotional ad is that, well, you'll hear it was a pretty good show.
Congratulations to NYPD Blue for its 26 Emmy nominations, more than any other series in television history.
Love you guys.
Love you too.
Isn't it time you joined the force? NYPD Blue, Tuesday on ABC, viewer discretion advised.
And you said you had one more cut for us.
Well, this was kind of fun. It was a local commercial for Magic Springs and the now defunct Magic 105, which was the rock and roll station in Central Arkansas. But this was they had a rock and roll show that they were going to have at Magic Springs the weekend coming up. So this is the commercial for that.
This Saturday, July 30th, Magic Springs and Magic 105 FM present One Hot Weekend. From noon till 3, catch the Arkansas Regional Bank Shot Basketball Tournament. The proceeds go to Easter Seals and the winner goes on to the national tournament. Then at 8, Pepsi Hot Rock Nights features 38 Special, one of rock and roll's all-time hottest bands live on stage performing classic hits. Come out for a day of fun July 30th at Magic Springs.
There's more thrills galore in 94
at Magic Springs.
That is awesome. Magic Springs is
it's still around. And
it's
would
you say it's got roller coasters and stuff in Hot Springs? Is that it? Yeah, I've never been. I've seen it from the highway.
It's really hot. You know, it's a huge asphalt amusement park, and when you go there in the summers, I mean, it's a lot of fun, and they also have a water park.
Mm.
So, but I mean, it's a huge draw in hot springs area.
I mean, it's not like Six Flags big or anything, is it?
It's close.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's and then they have this area for concerts, and they still have shows there.
Yeah.
It's not 38 Special, but oh, and we were talking a few weeks ago about people who listen to the show.
Yeah.
We have a huge fan in Bentonville.
Oh.
Her name is Ann Dixon.
Okay.
Not a blood relative of mine, but second removed cousin or something. But listens every Monday.
And she reached out to let you know?
Yes.
Ah, well.
That was great.
Ann Dixon? Wouldn't it be great if this was her birthday, if she was born?
I know.
But probably not. 1 in 365 chance. Randy, I love this. I love this. Thanks for making me feel older.
Oh, sure. My pleasure.
How can people see all these newer, later edition digitized files?
Well, not yet.
Oh, okay.
But they
will they be able to?
They will be able to see them on the Pryor Center website. Just Google Pryor Center, and you'll see the older stuff first.
Sure.
And then some of our current interviews. But it's coming.
Okay. Thanks, Randy Dixon.
All right.
What is Itokawa? I'm Caitlin Ahrens, the Pluto manager with NASA Goddard, and this is Scratching the Surface. Itokawa is a peanut-shaped asteroid, a near-Earth object of the Apollo group, and a potentially hazardous asteroid to Earth. It is about the size of the Empire State Building. But imagine the Empire State Building to be completely built of rubble piles and gravel. This is Itokawa. It was discovered in 1998 and named after the Japanese rocket engineer Hideo Itokawa. It is an S-type asteroid, meaning that it is composed of a lot of silicate minerals. This also means that it's very porous and lightweight. It was the first asteroid to be the target of a sample return mission with the Japanese Hayabusa space probe. Hayabusa collected more than 1,500 regolith dust particles from the asteroid's surface and then returned to Earth in 2010. Having these dust particles have really opened many doors to not only understanding our own solar system's evolution, but also led the way to future asteroid collection missions, maybe even the future asteroid mining endeavors. Surface features on this rubble pile of an asteroid are named after testing facilities involved in solar system science and rocketry. One crater on Itokawa is named after Laurel, after the city of Laurel, Maryland, where the Applied Physics Laboratory is established.
KUAF Pluto manager Dr. Caitlin Ahrens studied space and planetary sciences at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. She's currently a postdoctoral researcher at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland. Scratching the Surface is a production of KUAF Public Radio in Fayetteville, Arkansas.
This is Ozarks at Large. One of the annual events in Northwest Arkansas, that is exactly what it says, is the United Way of Northwest Arkansas's Fill the Bus campaign. Literally, for the past 15 years, people have brought school supplies and filled a bus. Well, it's a little bit different this year because of the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. This year, United Way of Northwest Arkansas is accepting monetary donations from the community and will handle all of the shopping itself. If you'd like to make a donation, you can simply text FTB to 30306, or you can go online to unitedwaynwa.org/bus. The Fill the Bus program serves 15 schools across Northwest Arkansas, and there are partners including Bic, Crayola, Clorox, and Coca-Cola on board. Again, to find out more, unitedwaynwa.org/bus. So Fill the Bus is one reminder that summer eventually turns into fall. Here's another one. Washington County Historical Society's 49th Annual Ice Cream Social is coming up. It's August 21st from 3 until 6 in the afternoon at the Headquarters House and Museum at 118 East Dixon Street in Fayetteville. It's a perfect summer event. It has ice cream, it has cookies, it has water, it has lemonade. All proceeds raised support the mission of the Washington County Historical Society. If you'd like tickets or you'd like more information, Washington Historical Society on Facebook.
The Northwest Arkansas Kiva Hub is offering microloans to disadvantaged small business owners or sole proprietors, such as woman-owned, black-owned, and Hispanic Latinx-owned. Through this program, approved businesses operating in Benton or Washington counties can also qualify for a dollar-for-dollar loan match fund from the Walton Family Foundation, kiva-nwa.org, for more information. Guitarist and Grammy Award winner Gary Clark Jr. comes to the Walmart Amp Saturday, October 23rd. Fusing blues, rock, and soul music with elements of hip-hop, Clark's most recent release, This Land, earned 3 Grammy Awards, including Best Contemporary Blues Album. Tickets and more information available at amptickets.com or 443-5600.